Greetings, I'm your host Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. But we'll be doing our special sports show, so this is actually Beyond the Red Zone. So glad to have you guys here with us live, and of course, glad to have you guys that'll be listening to this later on, and of course, listening to this in this audio-only form. Before we start, if you're new to the channel, please hit that like button. Don't forget to hit subscribe. And the bell, so you're notified whenever we go live, as we're constantly adding new shows. And we just do this whenever. We used to kind of try to do it on Mondays, and that didn't work with everybody's schedule. So we fit these in whenever we can. Yesterday, I gentrified White Guy Wednesday, and we did a Pop Life episode with actress Diane Franklin, who you may know from starring as the princess in Bill and Ted. You may also know her as Monique, the French exchange student, and Better Off Dead. It was a fun interview. She stuck around for a little longer than I expected. Check that out. That's up right now. As always, thank you to all the subscribers on YouTube and Twitch and all the audio-only podcast formats you find us on. Thank you to the patrons. Collectively, you are the fuel and the engine that keeps TIR moving along. If you're enjoying what we do here and want access to the post-show champagne room, which we will be going into tonight, we're going to try to keep it as tight of an hour as possible. And Mac and I will be joined by MT. And as we promised on Tuesday night, we will be doing that special champagne room show discussing the inside dope of the hip-hop industry, and kind of dissecting a conversation that Vince Staples had on one of these hip hop podcasts. But if you would like access to the Champagne Room, past and present, there's only one way: become a patron for as little as $2 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. Also, if you listen on Apple, for all the Apple podcast listeners, which from the audio only, I believe it was about 48% of the audio only listeners listen on Apple. There is a subscription service now that Apple offers, and I have been putting the Champagne Rooms on there for the last 3 weeks or so. So they are up on there. Now that that's all out of the way, with technically 2 weeks, I mean, why do they have week zero in college football? I don't get it. With technically 2 weeks already in the books, college football is off to a surprisingly good start. The swan song of the Pac-12 seems to be going extremely well, with them being the only conference to go undefeated in non-conference play last week. I would hit the cheers button since I am a Pac-10-12 homer. Number 9 Clemson was blown away by the unranked Duke. And of course, the story that is dominating college football: Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes beat TCU as 20-point underdogs. So who will be in the college football playoff? What school will play Cinderella darling? And who will be the overhyped disappointment? I have my good friend and Beyond the Red Zone co-host Mac to shed some light on this and much more. And again, don't forget, after this show, we'll be going into the Champagne Room to definitely have some good times shenanigans with MT. So please welcome my good friend and co-host, college football know-it-all, Mac. Yeah! It's not the same without the applause, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all right, though. You know, we'll just start making our own. We'll just listen to the breeze off the, while you're on your deck, man.
I hope it's not too loud. The dogs.
No, dude, Bro, seeing it makes me happy, because like going outside in North Carolina right now is taking your life in your own hands, because it's been so oppressively hot. Ooh. Like when the storm was rolling in 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it dropped to like 75, mm-hmm. everybody's outside. Like we knew we weren't going to get hit with much. It rained a little, like there was a storm, but like no big deal, right? Mm-hmm. But just the breeze was nice. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. And then the Monday hit and it's like, low of 90, high of 98. And you're just like,
oh. I have a good friend from Alabama, and he hit me up kind of out of the blue, just checking in on me. And when the hurricane was happening out here, and I told him, I was like, oh, it's okay. It's definitely not southern weather, man. Like, don't worry about me. And I sent him what the weather was like, which I think we had a high of like 78 out here. You know, it doesn't really get too hot where I live. Yep. I see why San Diego wins like best weather in the country every year. It's It is kind of the it also doesn't get too cold at night, so you can just kind of walk around like this at all times.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's I miss weather like that, dude. Like, and I was talking to my buddy, like one of my best friends, Clay. He lives in Austin, and Austin has just had like 3 straight months of 100-degree
heat. Yeah, right? Yeah. I was talking to Griscom about that, and I remember, was it like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, where that area of Texas as well, like the Austin, San Antonio area, was breaking records with heat. People were a little dying in their house. You know, Texas is hellscape. Yeah. Literally, it is literally a hellscape. And
the thing is, they're right on the river too, dude. So they get pummeled with 100-degree weather during the summer, and in the fall, I use that term loosely, it rains like twice, and that river just fucking floods, man. Mm. So like that, it's fucking miserable. He's like, dude, I'm getting ready to move to like. And I was
like, that sounds like a good idea until you experience a Minnesota fall. You know, well, any fall in that region is worse than any winter I've ever spent in any part of the world.
Well, dude, what kills me, it's like, you know, he owns like 2 condos down there. He bought them when he was working before Facebook became Meta. You know, he was working for mm-hmm. Facebook at the time. So he mm-hmm. got the money together, bought these 2 condos, one for him, one for his mom. And right before the housing boom went through the fucking roof there, right? So he's like, dude, I can just sell them both and, you know, get a nice pad somewhere further north. And then he went to DC because Meta opened up a huge office there. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, you're coming back to Austin. He's like, bet. He was there 3 months. He was part of the layoffs. Right.
There's a good if you guys are interested in Austin and tech work, and especially I don't know if you see it where you're from, Mac. People always talk about the exodus of California people going to Texas. There's some great articles about people that go there and come back, because if you've been in California for a few years, or if you're a native and you go to Texas, it is not, I'm not built for any weather that isn't this.
Dude, yeah. And it's like, you got to think, remember what happened last summer when their power grid mm-hmm. failed?
Yeah.
You know, after failing during the winter. You know, like you couldn't pay me all the money in the fucking world to move to Texas. I wouldn't do it.
There's some cool parts of Texas, dude. There's some dope parts of Texas. I'm not going to lie. Like, we had a John Salazar on the show, who's a legitimate news reporter. I met him at a show I did in this little bitty art town called Marfa, Texas. I don't know if you've ever been there before. Little border town.
No, I didn't even know it existed.
It's a little gem. I think the population in Marfa, no bullshit, is like 1,000 people. And most of them are like artists and shit that came from other places. And we played this little hole in the wall dive, and he happened to be out there. And there's parts of Texas that I hella dig. But like living there, I can't.
Oh, dude, Austin was rad to visit. It was great. Like, when I was there, I had some of the best food I've ever eaten.
Yeah.
6th Street is awesome. Top of that, it's got a very active and vocal communist party right there in the state capital. It's fucking rad, dude.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let's talk about the state of Texas and football. Texas is ranked relatively high right now.
Yeah,
and they're about to take on the University of Alabama. If there's one place I wish I was this Saturday other than my fucking house, I wish I was in Austin at Griscom's house grilling and getting ready to watch this game, because I'm sure it's going to be nuts and it's going to be fun. What is your take on that? And then we'll start going down the list of the top 25. But that's maybe the biggest game of the week. I don't know a bigger game this
week
than that.
There isn't. This is it. This is Texas's measuring stick to see if they're really back, right? Because Texas mm-hmm. hasn't been worth a damn since Mac Brown won that title with Vince Young, right? Mm-hmm. So we're on the mm-hmm. cusp of 20 years, dude, right? We're at a decade and a half of Texas football irrelevance, right? And one, it warms my heart to know, like, have Texas fans be all in their feelings that their team has just absolutely underperformed since, you know, Young left. But this is a very beatable Bama team, man. the offensive line doesn't look good. I think that young quarterback they have, and his name escapes me, and I apologize for that. I don't follow Alabama football. I catch him
good,
you know, when I can. Good. But that QB, I mean, you look at that snap, that the center skipped three times off the fucking ground. And he, you know, that QB picked it up and ran it 21 yards for a fucking touchdown, right? He didn't have the eye-popping numbers that you like have sort of come to expect out of Alabama QBs, mm-hmm. but he threw for like 195, had 40 yards on the ground. And just, I think he showed himself that he's what's needed this season, because Alabama's typically dominant offensive line didn't look great. You know, the athletes that they have at wideout, I don't think they have the same caliber as past years, you know? And this is just a beatable Alabama team. And honestly, I think Saban is kind of bothered by the fact that Kirby Smart has kind of taken the SEC powerhouse hat away from him, because I don't know anybody beats Georgia anytime soon, man. I just don't. They are stacked top to bottom. They reload at every position very well. And yeah, they might play some close games, but to me, that's the measure of a good team. When you can't put up 50 points and you can win 21-18, you know, or 20-17, that's the mark of a good team. You pull the win out when maybe not everything's firing on all cylinders, or, you know, your star players are having a bad night, you know. Like, so, like, I just, Georgia's just so fucking good right now. Like, and that's all I could really say. They are so ridiculously good that I don't know anybody knocks them off in the next 4 to 5 years. Like, I don't know if they go on a run where they win like 8 straight national championships. That'll never fucking happen. They're looking to win 3 in a row this year, and that hasn't been done since the University of Minnesota did it in the 30s. Right?
You got your first question of the day. JB asked, is the quarterback in at Georgia legit?
Yeah, I mean, dude, this first game of the season after, you know, what, four years of Stetson Bennett starting. And we gave Bennett a lot of shit for being like a preferred walk-on. But he did knock out a whole ton of like transfer QBs that were like top 10 QBs in the country. They couldn't beat him for that starting job, right? So you're going to have a few hiccups, especially when you have a new QB and a new offensive coordinator, because their old coordinator left to go take that same job with the Ravens in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you're going to have, you know, some growing pains there. It's just like with all the Ohio State fans that are like, we need to fucking fire Ryan Day right now. and I'm like, bro's lost 5 games his entire career. Why the fuck would I want him fired? You know, McCord didn't look that great. But I think that comes with him getting actual game time reps with those wideouts, because nobody recruits wide receivers the way Ohio State does now. Nobody. And I think a lot of that has to do with Brian Hartline. And I actually think that Hartline by the probably midseason will be the one calling plays. I think Ryan Day is going to see the writing on the wall and realize he's going to have to give up those duties. But, you know, like if McCord doesn't pan out as the OSU starting QB, they want to put Brown in, fucking cool, man. I just think that maybe Day should have split, you know, the start up, like maybe McCord plays the first half, Brown plays the second half. But for me, a fucking win's a win, dude, whether it's against Indiana or whatever, but we got a Big Ten win. That's fucking, well, that's important, you know?
Let's go down the list. And by down, I want to start from 25 and let's work our way up to 1.
Okay.
And I want to get your take on some of these teams. And Clemson fell quite a bit because they didn't just get beat by Duke. They got mollywopped by Duke.
They were manhandled.
And this that quarterback took some massive hits. That kid did not look like he was going to be able to. I felt for him. He's a tough young man because he took some hits.
Yeah, and the thing is though, at the point of attack on both offense and defense, Duke's lines took care of business, you know, just took care of business. And we're not used to seeing that, right? Because like Duke's supposed to be this really nerdy basketball centered school, period, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the last few years since that new head man came in, I mean, Duke won 9 games last year. Absolutely. no reason for Duke to be winning 9 fucking football games. Like, they had a couple good years under Cutcliffe, but like Cutcliffe knew that, you know, they win 10, 11 games, maybe win like a divisional championship. They weren't going to beat, they didn't have the athletes to beat Clemson, you know, in the ACC title game. But this new coach comes in and he's just recruiting, I mean, perfect players for the system he's implemented, which is like a weird mix of read option and kind of like pro style. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really understand, like, because, you know, he was running 2 tight ends that game with the QB and shotgun and the running back 3 yards behind the QB. So it was like this weird kind of like power
pistol-ish
offense. Yeah. And then you'd see him run like a pro style with a fullback. You know, it was all over the place, but I loved it because Clemson didn't know how to prepare for every look that I believe his name's Elko, Mike Elko. You know, every look that Duke threw at him, and it was something else, man, especially considering the fact that Clemson for the last 10 or, you know, probably 10 years has had one of the roughest run defenses, and Duke sliced them like butter. You know, they got big chunk plays. They were getting like those 3-4 yard plays that you need to sustain drives, but they weren't getting hit much in the backfield, you know, and that,
no,
that says a lot when you have somebody the caliber of Clemson. But like, it's just like, look at DJ Uiagalelei. You know, he transferred out to Oregon State. And you know, he started, you know, he was the guy that took over from Trevor Lawrence, and he had the world, you know, the weight of the world on his shoulders, and every Clemson fan is about him. And he went and had a great fucking game at Oregon State. And then you plug in this other, you know, Clemson QB who didn't look good either. And even, you know, Dabo kind of went outside the Clemson family to bring in a new OC, and it didn't look good. So, like, I just think Clemson had their run, and it's done. You know, like, I don't know what it is about the state of South Carolina, but they think that they've always had great football. And it's like, bro, your teams suck ass for, like, half a century. You have 10 years of, you know, in Clemson's case, you know, championship winning football, and you think that the game was invented down there, and the only fan base worse than Clemson is South Carolina, who, you know, at most has only won 10 games a couple times in the entire existence of the program.
Oh yes, Steve Spurrier couldn't save that program. Jadavian Clowney couldn't save that program. What's funny about South Carolina too, I had a USC hat there on there when I was on tour with Gabba. I remember being in an elevator at some arena, and this dude looked over at me. He goes, "This is the real USC." And he's talking about like South Carolina, and I couldn't do anything but laugh in his face.
Oh, dude, yeah, I see that shit all the time, you just hear the cries of Cox, and it's just like, dude, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, I can't take you. I'm like, I'm not even gonna even gonna acknowledge this with some sort of like insult back. I'm just gonna, you know, pat you on the head patronizingly and.
Oh yeah.
You go ahead and take that. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, all right, buddy, you got a very funny like team mascot, but you know, Southern Cal's won how many national titles, has had how many Heisman winners?
You know, dominant like, NFL players.
Yeah. You know, how many players has South Carolina put in the NFL in its entire existence compared to USC since 2000? I'd say USC easily laps them, you know, twice.
Just USC's, you know? 2000 season. Just the 2000 to 2005 is like enough. So, okay, so we did Clemson. Tulane. Can Tulane go to the SEC?
Oh, dude, remember, like we talked about during the realignment thing, Tulane was a founding member of the SEC, right?
Can they go back where they belong now?
I mean, if what happens, what I think is going to happen – where we're going to have 2 20-team conferences. I think they'll do away with the college football playoff at that point and just do whoever wins the conferences plays each other as the national, like for the national title. I could see Tulane getting in there, being one of the 20 teams. Because, you know, colleges are still going to be like, listen, we're expanding again, completely destroying the game everybody knows. But academics is important. So...
Let's bring Tulane.
Tulane, Vandy. Come on down, man.
Xavier, you're next.
Yeah, you know, like, but I mean, this is the funny thing. I was talking to my buddies about this, and they're like, well, you know, there's going to be teams that get pushed out. And I was like, Vandy will be one of them. I guarantee it. Because outside of baseball and maybe a couple other women's sports, like, Vandy doesn't have a robust athletic department, right? Like they really do focus on the books. And that's not what they want. They want the nerdy schools who also have great athletes there, right?
Stanford.
So like, yeah, Stanford. Bam. I mean, dude, they win the Director's Cup every year but three since they started it. Like they just dominate at, you know, in the Olympic sports, which the ACC is going to have a huge boom there with bringing in Stanford. You know, and before anybody wants to get fucking cross about, well, you know, the ACC and athletic, you know, an Atlantic Coast Conference with, you know, fucking two schools from California and one in Texas. Listen, the day they announced that, you know, them accepting those two or those three teams, you want to know where Duke's women's soccer was at? Stanford campus. Where? They were on Stanford campus playing a match.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's just like, dude, like, is it going to cost more? Sure. Is Stanford and Cal leaving a lot of money on the table? Absolutely. Are they leaving as much on the table as SMU? Because SMU is foregoing all money from the conference for 9 years. And the boosters have already been like, oh, y'all, we got it. Don't worry about it. We're just going to cut you checks. We did it in the 80s.
Yeehaw!
Right? Yeah, you know, so like, I mean, Tulane's a fun program. I really, really like what Willie Fritz has done down there. Just unpredictable offense. You know, they don't have the biggest guys, but they play fast. And, you know, they won the American Athletic, you know, put up 11 wins last year, won an amazing bowl game against, you know, your Trojans. You know, and it's just, I think this is a program on the upswing. And if those two 20 team conferences emerge, I can see Tulane being like the Western one. I think it'll be more graphically aligned at that point because every conference is essentially coast to coast at this point, you know, but Tulane's fun. I like watching Tulane games the same way as I love watching Tuesday night Mid-American Conference games, which, you know, you're either going to get, you're going to get a 63-60 game or a very odd 9-2 game. You know, like it's just going to happen that way. But yeah, Tulane's fun.
Okay, so let's see. We got Tulane, Texas A&M. Kind of a big letdown for the SEC. I know we all talked about that Johnny Manziel doc and thinking about Texas A&M coming into the SEC. When Manziel was there, they had was it two upsets or just one? I remember they had that one big upset against Alabama.
They had two of them his freshman year, which kind of pushed him into that Heisman Trophy.
The superstardom. But on the whole, Texas A&M hasn't produced that much amazing pro talent outside of like Von Miller. And was Von Miller in the league when they were still in the Big 12? That's a Big 12.
No, I think, hold on, they left
in 2010, 2011 season. Von Miller comes
2010, out 2011, and he might have been there in their last year in the Big 12.
Yeah,
because Miller's been in the league about 10 years now, hasn't he?
He came out same year as Cam Newton.
Yeah. So yeah, he might have been, you know, that last year in the Big 12, but they don't. Texas A&M doesn't. And I'm sorry, Jimbo Fisher. The only reason he's still there is because he has a buyout. Like if they wanted to fire him last year, they would have had the university would have had to pony up $70 million. Like for what? Dude's won one national title and left a fucking dumpster fire at Florida State. You know, to do it.
Yeah.
You know, he really did. And they're just now digging out of it, you know. Fucking.
They look all right.
Later. Yeah.
They look all right.
But for me, A&M, I mean, they play in the SEC West. I don't think they have the talent to go up against LSU and win that game. I mean, the SEC is just rough. It is just fucking rough. And I'm not sold on A&M having the longevity to get through the whole season and be in in the talks for who's going to win the SEC. I mean, bringing in Bobby Petrino to run the offense, smart, because Jimbo has shown you can't run an offense that was relevant 10 years ago now and be successful. I mean, Mack Brown learned that the hard way at Texas. You know, his offense was pretty – I mean, outside of Vince Young, that offense wasn't that great. It's just he had a transcendent college player in Vince Young that got him to that title, right? And then he had the Shipley brothers who spent, I think, a grand total of like 20 years in college together. And, you know, like, having that kind of continuity is always good. But when Mac Brown went back to UNC, what did he do? He brought in people that know the spread and read option. You know, because he knew, I'm not going to be able to run the same shit I ran at Texas and be successful.
And you can't recruit.
So, no, no. I mean, dude, nobody wants to be – I mean, look at Calvin Johnson. That's a guy I felt horrible for in college because he's obviously smart as shit. He got into Georgia Tech. That's a rough school to get into, right? And on top of that, he's this giant man who you could throw the ball within 10 feet and he's going to catch it. And what kind of offense did he play in?
Triple option.
The triple option with Paul Johnson. You know, like, I mean, it's imagine the numbers if he would have been playing in like an RPO spread style.
Well, look at what happened to those receivers that they take a run on those guys because they were growing 6'5", 230 pound, 4'3", 4'4", running receivers on trees for a few seasons. And there's only two that I can think of that really shined. Unless you know anymore, like at the next level, and that was, of course, Calvin Johnson. And I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years later, Demaryius Thomas comes out. And
Thomas was good.
It took him a couple years to really acclimate to the game. I really feel that when Peyton Manning got to Denver, you saw how great Demaryius Thomas could be. And sadly, he passed away.
Yeah, having a quarterback that knew what he was doing behind center always makes everybody better, right? And if you look at the QBs that were in Denver before, just a motley crew of nobodies. I mean, Osweiler, Jay Cutler, which still is the best meme I've ever seen, where somebody photoshopped a cigarette into his mouth and looking over his shoulder. And it's like, will somebody get open or don't? I don't give a shit. You know, and that's all I said.
Brandon Marshall has been on record saying some really nice stuff about Jay Cutler and their friendship and their playing days because they played together in Denver and in Chicago. And I remember, look, I was a Jake Plummer fan when he was at Arizona State. And I was super jazzed when he got the Cardinals to the playoffs. And I remember when Jake Plummer, they had played Denver, and I think the Denver beat the Cardinals that year. But I remember thinking, dude, if we just traded for Jake Plummer, if we got Jake Plummer somehow, I think we could do something. We get Jake Plummer. He puts up the biggest numbers in his career. If he didn't win the MVP that year, he was definitely close. And then they lost in the AFC Championship game to the Steelers.
Yeah. I mean, dude, Plummer, the poor guy, I think, only had so much left in that arm. Because it wasn't exactly a cannon, but he was accurate as shit, even in college. I remember watching a couple Rose Bowls between Arizona State and fucking Ohio State. And that used to make me angry because, you know, when we did get there after not shitting the bed against Michigan at the last game of the year, as we were so wont to do in the 80s and early 90s, getting to the Rose Bowl was great. And then you come across this Arizona State team that's got Plummer. Remember Tillman played on those teams,
yes.
Pat Tillman,
yes.
And who was just a wrecking ball on defense, man.
Bay Area native.
You know, and I never realized, just how small he was compared to a lot of the players on that team until I watched a replay. And he's like lined up in the middle of the defense as a linebacker. He wasn't even playing safety yet. He moved to safety until he went pro. And it's just like you see the other outside linebackers that easily have like 5 inches and 40 pounds on this dude. And Pat Tillman is just blowing up every single play at the line of scrimmage. And I'm like, motherfucker.
He was an
interesting cat. If I would have known more about football as a teen,
He was an interesting cat. I know people that grew up with the Tillman family. They had nothing but good things to say about that guy.
Dude, they were a very weird group of people. And I say weird like in a good way. They marched their own beat. Mm-hmm. They were very, you know, proud of their individualism, but they still really leaned into community. Like, I love that shit, man. I just finished reading Where Men Win Glory a couple weeks ago. And I was just, it even made me, I just walked around pissed off for like the next week. I'm like, how the fuck did they do this to Tillman? They fucked him so bad in every way, shape, or form.
Every way, shape, or form.
But I, you know, But let's stay on topic.
Let's stay on topic.
I can go on and on.
Okay, so this is what's going to take all of the show right here, and I understand that. We're a half hour in, I understand that. Colorado, Deion Sanders comes in, obliterates all these kids that had scholarships. They're all off the team. Mm-hmm. He has more people in the transfer portal than anybody else. So it's a team of whoever he wanted to bring over from Jackson State and his children.
Yep.
And
which include Travis Hunter at this point. Travis Hunter is essentially an honorary Sanders.
Travis Hunter could be, I said this to Adolph Reed the other day, college football fan, by the way. I think Travis Hunter might be the Shohei of professional football. I think he could actually play both ways on Sunday in a way that we've never seen.
I think the biggest issue, though, is he played 119 snaps.
That's insane.
Game one.
That's insane.
It is. And it's like he produced. He absolutely did. He balled out on offense, played amazing on defense. He broke up three passes and had a pick because they didn't want to throw to his side of the field. You remember Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yeah.
He played in Oakland with the Raiders. You know, he signs that big deal in Philly because of what he was able to do in Oakland, but they forget that he didn't play press man coverage. But he was awesome sticking with his man in more of I think they played like a Tampa 2 sort of, you know, soft zone. But he shut down his side of the field in Oakland for 4 years, you know, and he, like, I remember ESPN pointing out the stat. He signed the biggest cornerback deal at that time. And he had less than 10 career interceptions, right? Because nobody wanted to throw to the guy to that side of the field. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. That's going to be Hunter. That it will be Travis Hunter. There's a reason he was the number one overall recruit. And, he played a great game, but he can't play 119 snaps for 12 games. You can't do that. I really think, the Deion story is great. I think it's great for college football. But on the flip side of that, I think the bigger one was his son at QB, who had a great season at Jackson State. But can he translate that into success in the big leagues? And he absolutely did. I think Sanders
showed
a lot of touch on passes. Mm-hmm. You know,
I watched a few Jackson State games
last year.
I watched their bowl games because I really wanted to see how they played in the big kind of non-conference games. And they, to me, just didn't show up. And I don't think Deion Sanders is a good coach. I think what you see with him is – someone said in the chat, I think it was JB said in the chat, Deion Sanders understands football as marketing, and he doesn't do the same thing that all the other marketing guys do, because we have to be honest about what college coaches are. What coaches are at this level, at this high level, they are project managers. And
yeah, CEOs.
Yeah,
that's exactly what
they're just CEOs. And I like project manager. I think a CEO might do. I think they do a little bit more, but it's not much more. I'll give them that much more credit, not that much more. But Deion is exposing, like, look.
I will say this before you get into your point. You got to think. A recruiting full time gig.
Yeah.
Right. It's full time. So I will absolutely agree with you. That is a lot more done in a year than any.
There's no CEO that
any one of them.
No. No. So there is some stuff. You have to at least be on the field when the cameras are there, right? Deion, in my opinion, is so upfront about the rah-rah, the fake halftime speeches that he's given to motivate these kids and shit like that. It's like, let's just be honest who Deion Sanders is. Just go back to that call or when that guy had the device in the room when Deion Sanders was trying to beat up the principal of his charter school. Like, that's who Deion Sanders is, in my opinion. Like, he doesn't fuck them kids. Yeah. Might as well be his mantra. But is he good for Colorado? This has been really interesting because if you remember when Colorado had that run in the early to mid 90s, one of the issues that people that went to Colorado had, the University of Colorado is not in Denver, it's in Boulder. And Boulder is pretty white. And one of the big issues that players were having, even the superstar players, we're talking like Eric Bieniemy, Darian Hagan, was dealing with the police. So here comes Dion, and you're not just bringing kids in from like New York and LA, like they were in Colorado, where these were like a lot of LA kids. You're bringing in kids from the South. And Boulder, Colorado is not the South. Someone says Mork and Mindy Town. That's a great analogy for what Boulder, Colorado is. So how he's able to get these kids in here and you don't hear about them getting in trouble. Again, the police ain't going to cover up for you out there. Historically, they have not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I mean, you got to think Rashawn Salaam, running back, Heisman Trophy winner, right? Practicing Muslim. Got arrested looking for a temple to go pray at.
I forgot about that. Like they're historically, right? They have been horrible with their black.
Yeah, athletes. I mean, and I think we can, like, Sanders is going to grow a community in Boulder where it's going to be very self-contained. Mm-hmm. You know, because for Sanders, this is his first big time job, and you got to think this is going to be a huge ego boost to a man whose ego is already very, very big. And rightly so, you know, other than his last 2 years in the league, he was a dominant corner, you know, but can you imagine his next gig when he rebuilds Colorado football, you know, easily the biggest doormat, bottom five program,
20 years,
you know, in the country, you know, and he gets this team up to 10 wins. Able to carry their own weight in the new Big 12, right? Maybe even challenges for a couple conference titles. Dude, there isn't going to be an SEC squad out there where the athletic director is like, okay, coach, you won us 10 games. You got us to the Camping World, you know, bowl game. That's cool. But you're fired, right? You're fucking fired. And then they're going to back that Brinks truck up to fucking Deion Sanders' house and make him the highest paid fucking state employee in the goddamn world.
Do you think, and look, there's a reason why certain people take certain jobs, because it's an easy paycheck if you can pull off a winning season. The Stanford job for years was like the cushy job that you go take when you're about to retire, because if you can get those kids 5 to 6, even 7 wins, you're God, you're not expected to do much, you're going to get paid well. You don't have to chase anybody down. That's another thing people forget about these jobs. You're chasing kids down all the time.
Oh, yeah. All year, except the few little dead spaces they have, you know, and that's, you know, that's where your project managerness really kicks into overdrive. And, you know, that's why Saban has just hit so well for the, you know, over 20 years. But I think it's starting to get to Saban now. I mean, when you look at last year, who was their offensive coordinator? Bill O'Brien, right? Yeah. Spent some time in college, was a head man at Penn State. But a lot of years in the pros, man. He's an NFL guy. Do you think he recruited a lot? Fuck no, he did not. He didn't come from that world. When he was at Penn State, he let his coordinators do most of the legwork, and he would come in with a text message or a phone call to kind of push the recruit over the edge into signing, right? But like, I think Saban's kind of at that point now, right? He's an elder statesman of the game now. I mean, you look at a lot of these college coaches, they're young as fuck. Like, I look at my life, I'm like, where did I go wrong? You're 33 years old, even if you're you're 33 years old coaching at Eastern Michigan, and you're still making $300K a year. And I'm fucking 42 this year. And I'm like, God damn it. You know, these dudes are getting younger. These coaches are getting younger and younger because, you know, they're immediately when they know, okay, I'm probably not going pro. I'll give it a shot. Maybe I stick around on some practice squads or I go play in the spring leagues. but they immediately go back as interns and immediately start coaching, you know, or grad assistants, you know. It's nuts how these kids have to get into playbooks and everything as kids, right? When they're playing, when they're actively trying to chase that dream of playing in the NFL. But when they're coaching, man, it's not just getting into playbooks. You're designing plays. You're developing terminology. You know, you're doing all this. And these kids are doing it younger and younger and younger. It's going to push all these old fucks out at one point, because that's what athletic departments want. They want the head football coach or the head basketball coach, you know, to be kind of like the face of the entire athletic department. You know, like UNC has a great story right now, and it's the women's lacrosse team. Their new head coach won a national championship at UNC last year. Coach retires. They tab a 23-year-old to take over one of the most successful lacrosse programs in the country. That's a great fucking story. That's rad as fuck. But we're talking about Mac Brown's crusty old white ass, you know, who still hasn't figured out how to recruit defensive players, you know? And it's bit him in the ass since he came back to UNC. They can't play defense. They got a great quarterback, great skill players they're putting in the NFL now. Fucking recruit for shit. Their top linebacker, Jason, is a converted quarterback. Literally, their top linebacker, top defensive player on that team, was recruited to UNC as an 18-year-old quarterback. And when he realized he wasn't playing behind Sam Howell and Drake May, they're like, hey, man, you're a big dude. Want to switch positions? He's like, yeah, I'll go play linebacker because I know I can guarantee get playing time. You know,
who did that? Eric Fisher did that, right? Or is it Luke Joeckel? No, Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher, I think, started as a quarterback and eventually moved to offensive line where he was the first overall pick. Let's stay in North Carolina and talk about Duke.
Duke, I think, has upset like potential all year. Like, can you imagine if they kind of bottled what they did against Clemson and just kind of play that way for the rest of the season? Like, maybe they don't win 12 games, but dude, can you imagine 10, 11 wins and them playing? I believe they're in the Coastal Division. I can never keep the ACC divisions up. This is the last year for divisions anyway. But can you imagine them like playing for an ACC title? Like, it'd be fucking bedlam. I went to a Duke game last year because my mom works for the university and got free tickets, and it's a great little stadium. Don't get me wrong. But after going to the Horseshoe, I'm just like, fuck, man. Like, I mean, this is, you know, in the midst of a 9-win season last year. In this game, Virginia Tech, they were playing Virginia Tech. And honestly, half the people that I saw at the game were VT fans, you know, and the stadium wasn't even sold out, you know. So do they have the ability to, like, reach Duke students to get them to come out to more games? Because home field advantage is important, man. Like, I don't give a shit how good you are going to play in, like, the Big House in Ann Arbor. That's got to be one of the most unnerving feelings as a visiting team. You know, just 110,000 people all hating you, you know, and just letting you hear it every play. It's nuts. You have to develop kind of that kind of noise level or that kind of uncomfortableness at your home stadium for visiting teams. And Duke doesn't have that right now. But I think it would be fucking rad. I love the kid, the quarterback. You know, he wins this probably the biggest game in Duke history. And he's being interviewed by ESPN. And he's like, hey, professor, like, I totally get my assignment in. Can I get an extension? And literally fucking professor goes, hey, man, your two offensive tackles got the assignment in. No, you cannot have an extension.
Wow. That's actually dope. That's Duke football right there. That's why they won't win a championship.
Yeah.
If you can't let the quarterback slide, what are you doing?
Yeah. You know, and on top of that, man, I just don't think they have the size up front to go up against Georgia, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think they have the size up front to go against Bama, Ohio State, Michigan. Now, would I be surprised if they fucked around and somehow got in the playoff? I think that's hilarious. And I would love to see it. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Mm-mm. Well, stranger things have happened, so I got my fingers crossed. I was also one at Boise State to go to the – what year was that, 2004, 2005, where they played in the
BCS Bowl. I mean, in Boise, I mean, I wouldn't say Boise fell off, but when it comes to them like pasting the big league teams, they kind of have. Like, they're going to win 10 games. They play in the Mountain West, you know. But, you know, their inability to win against, you know, the Power 5 teams the last probably, honestly, 10 years since Peterson left. Like, it hasn't been great. And I think ultimately that's kind of where the Pac-12 fucked up when all the realignment stuff started and they didn't jump on Boise in 04. You know,
I was like, so shocked. Boise and Fresno State, I felt like, were two schools that I wouldn't have mind seeing in the Pac-12. BYU, I wouldn't have mind seeing in the Pac-12. I thought that would have been a great thing to have BYU and Utah in the same division.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think the Big 12 is going to love having that, you know, what the fucking holy war that they call it. I think the biggest thing with BYU at the time is that they consider themselves the Notre Dame of the West, which I kind of always thought was hilarious because, yes, you're a very affluent, mostly white religious school. But outside of that year, McMahon won that title in 83. I mean, what have you done, dude? I mean, at least Notre Dame is playing like in the big leagues. Like, they played in the WAC, the Mountain West, you know, and then went independent so they could kind of pick and choose their own schedule. And they weren't exactly beating, you know, power teams, man. But I mean, hey,
they beat
man,
Miami in what, 1991, the year they beat Miami and they won a national championship with Coy Detmer, retired, or no, Ty Detmer that year. Was that 91?
91. Did they win the national? I don't think they won the national title that year. Yeah. I think they were.
Yeah.
Was it 91?
That was the year that Detmer won the Heisman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I believe you're right. I couldn't remember if they won the national title or not, but
I was in the eighth grade. So I feel like 91 is the year. I was in the eighth grade and I think Ice Cube's Kill at Will came out. So those are the two things I remember from that era of my life.
No, they only won one national title and that was in 1984.
Oh, what did they do in 91 then? It was just the Heisman year for Detmer?
Yeah, I think that was the Heisman year. I think they lost one game and that's what kind of took them out of the running. But yeah, man, like, I don't know, man. BYU, I mean, good for them. But I mean, it's going to be, they went 8-3-2 in 91.
Was it 90 then? Was it the year before in 90?
Here. I'm looking, man.
I'm so sorry. I got you doing all the research work.
Oh, no worries, man. No worries. Yeah, they actually tied in the Holiday Bowl against Iowa 13-13 in 91.
Jeez.
Oh, man. But yeah.
Okay, well, let's go to the next school because we're 49 minutes in. Ole Miss. Is Ole Miss going to do what Ole Miss always does and win like 8 or 10 games and then choke to the big schools?
I mean, I'm still not sold on Lane Kiffin as like a big time.
Is anything more than a coordinator?
Yeah, like, well, I mean, he coached great at Florida Atlantic. Like, absolutely fucking coached his ass off there. 3 straight 10-win seasons, you know, like, I think he would be great at a school like that, you know? Ole Miss, though, like, it's another one of those, like, old school SEC teams that's, like, just thinks their reputation's a lot bigger than what they've actually done on the football field. Mm-hmm. I mean, he attacks the transfer portal, like, hardcore. You know, so, like, he's able to kind of restock what he has. I just think he's a lot like Ryan Day in the fact that he thinks he's the smartest dude on the field, and he overthinks and overcomplicates everything. So there's going to be – he's always going to have an upset. Every season he's going to have an upset. But he's also going to drop a game that he shouldn't. You know, like, you know, it'll be like some directional Southern school. Like Southwest Missouri Central managed to eke out a 3-point win over Ole Miss, you know, in 6 overtimes. You know, and it's not a game that should even be close. But Kiffin always manages to lose a game like that. So, like, I mean, again, they play in the West, SEC West. That fucking division is miserable. Like, the SEC in general is just fucking miserable. But, I mean, they could win 8 to 10 games. You know, they can. They got the talent for it. It just is Kiffin capable enough as a coach to put that season together? And honestly, I haven't seen it. You know?
Okay. Well, let's keep moving on up. The next school we have now we're in the top 20. So the next school we have is Wisconsin. Can your Wisconsin Badgers, I say your because it's your region, your Big Ten. Can your Wisconsin Badgers do anything this year? Or are they going to be another 8-win Wisconsin team?
I think this will probably be a rough first season because Fickell's completely changed the offensive side of the ball. A lot more pistol looks, a little, you know, they're trying to get downfield more. I mean, Wisconsin had multiple games last season where they threw like 12 passes or between 12 and 15 passes. Like you're not going to win like that. I think that going, you know, away from the divisions in the Big Ten is going to hurt Wisconsin the first few years that they're there because the Big Ten's very top heavy, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Right. And if there's a fourth, it would probably be Wisconsin, but that's not going to get you in a title game. It's not going to get you in the playoff. You know, so, but Fickell showed in Cincy that he can recruit people because who the fuck goes to Cincinnati to play football? Nobody. Honestly, if you're a good enough athlete, you're avoiding Cincinnati, right? Like this is the school Tommy Tuberville got so stressed out at Auburn, you know, coaching Auburn. He's like, I'm gonna go to Cincinnati. No expectations. I can win like 7-8 games and everybody's happy, you know, like
then not be accomplishment,
you know, I mean, yeah. And then I'm gonna go run for Senate and make sure that I withhold my support to promote echelon military officers and just piss off naturally everybody in Washington,
you know, and I hate gays.
And I refuse to answer any questions about white nationalists because they are American, and I'm not technically wrong. They are American. You know,
war eagle.
Yeah. Wait. I mean, whatever. Bearcats. No. I like what Fickell does as a coach. I like how he schemes for games. I thought, yeah, Cincinnati lost in the playoff, but he kept it close in Alabama. It probably shouldn't have been, you know. So I think Fickell's going to have the opportunity to really show out after he gets some players in there that he's recruited, not just hold over as coach, you know, that can play kind of like that up tempo offense. Because it doesn't matter now if you are a 6'8", 400, you know, high 300s, low 400 offensive lineman. If you're getting fucking speed rushed by the defensive end that's like 6'3", 250, but runs a 4'3", you're no good to anybody, right? And with a lot of these like RPO teams and the spread, it's predicated on the quarterback holding on to the ball longer to make that read. Right, to whether he's going to run or pass it, and then making his read downfield if he opts for the pass. So you have to be able to hold your blocks longer, right? And these big linemen have shown the last few years they've struggled with speed rushers and smaller defensive linemen who are quicker, you know. So like it's going to take some building in the trenches, but I mean Wisconsin will be fine. I think Fickell showed that he knows what he's doing. He can build a program that's going to have lasting success. Like, I don't see Cincinnati, like, falling off the cliff. You know, they're going to go through their own adjustment period. But I think they'll be okay. I really do. I think they'll be fine.
All right. Well, what's going on with Oklahoma?
It's called the Lincoln Riley hangover, I guess. I don't know.
I think they put, 73 points on somebody the other day? Was it Oklahoma that put 73 points? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like Oregon putting 81 on Portland State, you know, like that's supposed to happen. but like, you know, Venables went 6-7 last year, and like Oklahoma is one of those very kind of like impatient teams. And you got to think, right? Like, and this is what always killed me about Oklahoma, you know, during like the playoff system, you know, before our playoff, right? Like with the computers all involved and all that shit. Oklahoma's always up there, right? But this is a team that's only won one national title since 2000. and that was in 2000. How do they kind of finagle themselves into this, you know, we win all the time? Like, bro, like, yeah, you won the Big 12 and then would just get mollywomped in your fucking bowl games, you know? Like, it's just, it kind of surprised me. But, like, Venables is a great defensive coordinator. You know, he showed that for years in Oklahoma and then Clemson. But 6-7 is not going to fly, especially in a league that you should be winning, you know? Like, even with, even, this is before the additions of BYU, Cincy, and Central Florida, right, in the Big 12. Like, they should have dominated that conference with Texas being, like, ass, you know? And they didn't. You know, not to the level that you'd expect from them, you know? But, I mean, if Venables can get the offense working, and maybe they're not going to put up 73 every week, but they're going to need to put up points in the Big 12 to win. So if he can't do that, like, this could be a dude who's one of the most well-respected coordinators in the fucking planet, and in his first head coaching job, he only made it 2 years. You know, that's kind of...
That's rough.
That's not the... That's not the position you want to be in, because who the hell else is going to give you another shot?
Oh, so that's right? The job Deion takes, is the Oklahoma job, is what you're saying.
Oh, dude, wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised. Like, Venables fucks up, you know, but they're like, well, his buyout's kind of high, so we'll get, you know, he gets 4 years out of it. Deion's at, you know, Colorado for four. Maybe he tops out at 10 wins. And again, 10 wins in Boulder, you're fucking gold, dude. Just gold, man.
It's you and John Elway at that point as the kings of the city,
you know. And then, the Oklahoma boosters are like, all right, man, Venables, get the fuck out of here. We're gonna get Deion. and you know, those boosters, there's gonna be some other ones that are just like, man, we're gonna have new girls head coach.
but I mean, look, I do think. I wonder about that sometimes at certain places. And then I saw there was a post on NFL.com, I think, that the entire quarterback room of the professional Baltimore Ravens is all black.
Yeah.
All black backups, Browns, all black coaches.
The Browns
have an all black?
They had an all black quarterback room last season.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. You know, it's this isn't, you know, when we were – like born and grown up, you know, where black college quarterbacks were told you have to switch positions and all that shit. We're seeing how, I mean, especially with, you know, and we've covered this before with the advent of all these camps, like the, like the 7-on-7 that they play prior to season, you know, the positional camps that all these big time kids are going to these days, you know, I mean, they're coached from the time they're like 9-10 years old. And I think it's a great thing for kids that have shown they have the ability to go to the next level. Right. But I think it's bad for kids that maybe aren't as good. They got a head for the game, but they just don't have the physical capabilities to produce like as some of these top players,
JT Daniels,
you know, coming out of high school in the cup. Yeah. I mean, and look at Daniels, he's on his fourth college and his sixth year of eligibility at Rice. You know,
Rice,
so,
of all schools to go to, he went to Rice.
Well, the reason he went there is because his old high school, like, he was a positional coach at another school he was supposed to go, like, he originally was going to go to coming out of high school, and he didn't get him. You know, Daniels decided that he was going to go to USC. So when JT Daniels graduates, you know, gets his bachelor's anyway, after going to four schools, you know, he technically has worn out his ability to transfer, but he's a grad transfer now. So he was allowed immediate eligibility. And this coach gave him a call. He's like, hey, man, I know this program's ass, but you can just kind of come in here and you're going to start. And JT Daniels was like, bet, say less.
That was his response to the text message. Now, since we're kind of running out of time and I do have to go get the charger for this thing before it dies, I'm just going to name a bunch of schools till we get to the top 10, and you tell me what you think. If any of these schools have actual ability to start leapfrogging their way to the top 10, even in the playoff run. So Oregon State, Kansas State, LSU, Oregon, Utah, Texas.
Okay, Oregon State, I think, still has a great shot to win the Pac-12 again.
Really?
Especially with DJ there. Absolutely, dude. They played out of their mind football last season, especially in a town like Corvallis. If they can win the Civil War or whatever the fuck they're calling that game now, I think Oregon State has a good chance to win. Oregon, though, if they're hitting on all cylinders, has a chance to get to the playoff. Bo Nix is an outstanding quarterback for that system. I really like what the head coach has done out there. And he's still recruiting, even with all like the last 5 years of all the just the shit show that the Pac-12's become since Larry Scott was hired to his firing and all the rigmarole, right? That's a good team. Utah, again, I don't think you can ever count them out. Kyle Whittingham has just shown that he can win with his players. I think the key for Utah is getting Cam Rising back and healthy, keeping him upright. Because Rising has blown out, I think, 48 knee ligaments in the 5 years he's been in Utah. You know, like, it's he's just constantly hurt, but he's an amazing talent. The Pac-12 is going to be a rough run, I think. That in the last year, this thing's going to exist as it stands. And we can talk about this kind of later on, about where the Pac-12's going. You know, it's just, this is a, it's sad that the Pac-12 is going to go out when they are going to be, this is going to be a fun Pac-12 after dark season. With the amount of good teams they have and the quarterback play in this league between Nix, Mike Penix, that kid at USC, Caleb Williams, DJ in Oregon State, Rising at Utah. You know, there's just a lot of good quarterbacks in that league now. So, like, it's sad that the Pac-12 is going to go out on a high note like this, right? I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised if Lincoln Riley can finally coach some defense into the Trojans. That's a playoff team. But
easy.
The fact of the matter is USC is one of the worst tackling teams in the country by any metric. When you watch their first game, there were a lot of missed tackles, a lot of no wrapping up, you know, and it's that'll get you, especially when you start playing, you know, Oregon and the upper teams in the Pac-12. And then you get into the playoff, like, dude, you have to be able to come up with stops. You know, you have to get a couple. And right now, like, USC's defense is a fucking speed bump, and that's about it. It needs to be a wall.
You know, but... Now, look, we're running low on time, so I want to ask you this question. In the top 10, we have number one, Georgia. Number two, Michigan. Here, let me put myself on the screen. Sorry. Number two, Michigan, Alabama, Florida State, Ohio State, USC, Penn State, Washington at number eight. That's surprising for me, but Penix is a beast. Tennessee at nine. That's a little surprising for me as well. They have a great quarterback there. And Notre Dame, who I think is extremely overranked at 10. Of these 10 teams, who do you think makes it into the playoff? Do you think we're going to see, again, someone from the bottom rise up? Can USC hang on? Can Washington hang on and maybe rise up? Because Penix, again, is playing out of his mind. He is so pro ready and fun to watch. I think him and Caleb Williams are just so ready for the next step.
Yeah, well, I mean, Penix should be. He's been in college as long as Jordan Shipley.
But, that's Dr. Penix to you.
Yeah, doctor. Yeah. No, but I mean, if there's a Pac-12 team that's not USC that gets into the playoff, I think it'll be Washington. They are better defensively, and I think Penix has a better, and I know I'm going to catch hell for this, Penix has a better working knowledge of his offense than Caleb Williams does.
I agree.
Williams gets away with a lot because he's so talented, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's ridiculously talented, but a lot of plays end up looking like he scratched some shit in the dirt with a stick and told one guy to go long, the other guy to hit a cross route, and I'll make something happen, right? But Penix, everything he does is very measured, very done within the system. You know, like he's a ridiculously smart quarterback that makes very good reads, right? We talked about this last year when you were like, bro, have you been watching Penix? And I'm like, you mean the guy from Indiana? Fuck no. And then you were like, watch him. And I did. And I was like, holy shit. Right. But I mean, Washington, I could easily see getting the playoff. Georgia, I think, is already a shoo-in. I don't think they lose a game this year. I already told you about Ohio State. Like, if they can get one of those two quarterbacks humming with those receivers, always going to be a threat to make the playoff. I don't see two Big Ten teams making it again. I really don't. But, you know, Ohio State has to be able to beat Michigan. You know, they have to be able to win that game at the end of the year. You know, when you're talking about Notre Dame, I love Marcus Freeman. I thought he kind of got a raw deal last year. You know, and honestly, he caught hell. Everybody says because he's a young player or young coach, and he fucking is. He's only 35. But you and I both know why he caught hell from some circles. It has to do with, you know, skin pigment. you know, but a lot of people, there are a lot of like sports prognosticators and assholes with radio shows that bring up the fact, you know, they like to point out, you know, Willie McTaggart, a young black coach, and look what he did. He ran multiple programs into the ground. And they immediately target Marcus Freeman with that. And he's not even through his first year in Notre Dame, which is one of the toughest jobs in the fucking country. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Notre Dame's a little too high. But would I say that they shouldn't be in the conversation for top 10 if they can win out, especially if they beat Ohio State in in 2 weeks? Right. Mm-hmm. They've got a tough schedule. And if they can manage to beat Ohio State and USC in one season, that's a playoff team. It might not be pretty, you know, but with Hartwell from Wake Forest that transferred in, they finally have a quarterback that knows what the hell he's doing. And if you can throw for like a bajillion Wake Forest, you could do it anywhere, right? Because Wake Forest, not exactly known as a talent hotbed, and he's thrown to guys that have your height, Jason, and run like a 4.9 40, and Hartwell was just winning 10 games a year at fucking Wake Forest. Like, the guy can play ball.
And those guys went on to be dentists and CPAs and lawyers and congressmen.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of them are, you know, brain surgeons, and, you know, that's why they had great hands at wideout. And, you know, like, it's you know, it's Hartwell knows what he's doing. So Freeman, I can see getting in there. I definitely think Georgia gets in there. Pac-12 winner. If they don't have more than a loss, I can see them getting in there, whether it's USC or Washington. I mean, dude, I wouldn't even be surprised, like I said, if Oregon State fucking runs it back with actual good quarterback play, playing with a chip on their shoulder, especially since they got left out of everything when it came to realignment. You know, I think it'd be hilarious. Undefeated Oregon State in the playoff. Every fucking ESPN execs would cry if that happened, right? You know, Ohio, whoever wins the Big Ten, I think they get in, and it could be Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State. Penn State's got an amazing quarterback after sitting through like 28 years of Sean Clifford, you know, back there. You know, but I mean, the top 10 is going to be rough. I think we're going to see a lot of moving in and out of the top 10 because a lot of these teams are just so even now. And as we get into the midpoint of the season, like when we get really into conference play, I think we're going to see a lot of teams drop in and out of the top 10. But to answer your other question, I don't think we see a group of five team get into the playoff this year. I don't. I think there's just too many Pac-12 teams, too many Big Ten teams, too many SEC teams that are so good that they're going to get drawn from there. I mean, if we're talking a Big 12 rep, or if they get left out again, I think Big 12 gets left out again. I just don't see them being able to sustain an undefeated or one loss champ. I think their champ's probably going to have two losses. And you can't have two losses and make the playoff. It's never happened. And, you know, I don't think it ever will, the way it's stacked up, until we expand to the 12 team playoff, you know? So it's going to be interesting, man. I think this is going to be a really weird topsy-turvy season. I mean, fuck, Colorado already won a game.
Yeah.
They only won one last year.
That's kind of how I feel about it. You know, Colorado already won. Duke beat Clemson, something that no one really saw coming unless you were like super, super in the weeds Duke fan and knew everything about the roster. So I'm excited. Yeah,
there's only three full-time Duke football fans in the country, right? There's only three of them. So those guys believed. Everybody else, like on campus, are like, "There's football."
Yeah. Oh, wow, what do you mean?
It start.
We can we go to the game for free? Fun stat that I'll leave you with before we sign off. I believe I heard as I was leaving the other day that you could have paid $200 and went to every University of Colorado football game. live. You could have went to go see it for $200 for everyone. Now they said tickets for the game, the next home game, are going for like $400.
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, you said it yourself. Marketing. That's a big part of what Deion does. And the thing is, can you imagine next year, right, when he doesn't have to lean on the transfer portal to completely remake the roster? How many kids are going to be banging down the doors to go play for him, right? There's going to be so many. There's, I mean, ESPN top 300, right? The top 300 ranked high school players, which I still think it's weird that grown-ass men and women get so fired up over the comings and goings of what a high school kid's going to do. Let's face it. We were all in fucking high school, and we all changed our mind every 13 minutes. On the dot, every 13 minutes, right? Like, it just happens. And, like, Ohio State fans are like, I can't believe this kid, you know, said he was going to come to Ohio State, and now he's going to Florida State. This is fucking ridiculous. It's like, dude, they're 18. Like, come on, man. He was just playing Switch right before the cameras turned on, right? And they're like, hey, man, you got to, like, come make your announcement. He's like, oh, shit, hold up. I got
to where am I going? Like, yeah. It. Have you seen the video footage of the kid that went to Florida? He committed to Florida, and his mom was in all this Alabama stuff, and she walks out. Mm-hmm. Did you see
that? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I laugh my ass off, right? Because, like, you know, I hate that parents are so involved in it, right? Because, like, this kid has shown that he or she has this great athletic talent. And these coaches are coming in from everywhere. Like, kid, we want you to come to our school and play. And here's why you should play for us, right? And the kid, you know, he's he's already tuned out, because that's what we do as 18-year-olds. He probably has one earbud in. He's not even really, like, paying attention. He's just waiting for playing time, touches, you know, like, and my opportunity to play on TV. When he hears those, the earbud will come out, and he's like, okay, okay. All right, coach, want something else? Here we go. Back in. You know, like, these are kids, man. And you know, for a lot of them, too, it's like, you know, they're getting recruited from bumfuck Egypt, Kansas. You know, you really think that kid is going to go play at either two of his schools? Absolutely not. He's not going to Kansas State or UK, right? But Miami came calling. Holy shit, I'm in Southern Florida. There are beautiful women everywhere, a great nightlife, and I got an opportunity to play in a big conference, right? Like, that matters too. You know, so, like, don't act like these kids are just, like, Saban can walk into a room. And we've talked about this, too. You know where I'm not going to school? Fucking Tuscaloosa. I don't give a shit what anybody in chat said. I want no part of living in Alabama.
I mean, think about when Miami made their run starting in, like, 84. None of those quarterbacks, no, before 84, because they had Jim Kelly, 81, I guess. None of those people were from Miami. Kelly is from Ohio, right?
No. Kelly's from, like, right outside of Buffalo. He was an upstate New York
guy. Okay, upstate New York.
Kozar.
Kozar's from Ohio.
Yeah. Kozar was from Boardman, Ohio, right? And then you had Vinny, who was, I think, from
New York.
East Coast.
Yeah,
kid,
New York guy. Gino Toretta's from where I'm, the area I'm from, Pinole, California. Mm-hmm. Ken Dorsey's also from Arinda, California. He's from the Bay Area as well. So all those quarterbacks that were lighting it up for Miami. Most of those players, there were so many players. Once they got – one of the coaches was actually from the Bay, and that's why they got all those Bay Area recruits like DJ Williams. And
well, you had – remember, you had Schellenberger, started the Miami Renaissance. Yeah. He came over from Louisville. You had Schellenberger. Schellenberger gave way to Jimmy.
Yep.
Jimmy gave way to Dennis Erickson.
That's who it was, Erickson.
Erickson, yeah. Erickson gave way to Butch. Mm-hmm. Butch gave way to oh, God, what was that old guy? He was a Coker, Larry Coker.
Yeah. By the time we get to Coker, it's pretty much over. But look, we got to get ready to go to the champagne room. I will put the link up in Patreon. Give me a couple minutes. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. We wanted to kind of run down each school, but Mac's in-depth knowledge on the comings and goings of Duke football, you know, it takes up so much time.
It really does, man. And with me being here in North Carolina, I'm just inundated with Duke football. Not really. It's all like UNC right now, and NC State's kind of like all butthurt. Right. Like, we want to be good too. And then Duke's over there with, like, check out my ACT score. Oh, we beat Clemson too.
Like, the fact that North Carolina basketball schools are having this kind of wonderful football renaissance, where they're putting legitimate pros into the league and kind of have been for a minute now. It's fun to watch. I wish I could watch more college football. I'm kind of, you know, down here in Mexico, we don't get stuff on a satellite, so I have to watch it. There's a guy that streams it on YouTube, which has been beautiful for me.
The shitty thing is with all the financial issues Disney's having, they pulled all college football, like the streaming service they had to cover college football in Europe.
Yeah.
They shut it down and didn't let anybody know. And the shitty thing is they're begging the NBA, the NFL, and NHL to kind of partner with them on the streaming aspect because they don't want to cover like the financial part of it, of ESPN, all by themselves. Mm-hmm. The only one that's been receptive has been Adam Silver. And he's like, listen, we'll do it, but we want a significant ownership chunk. So like,
okay, I'm going to go now because the rapey dogs are losing their shit. So thank you guys for hanging out, and we'll be back in the champagne room. We are out.
Out.